Now, Tony Abbott has triumphed. The coalition is in power, thanks in part to a slick and disciplined campaign. A bit of recrimination has begun around the ALP. In fact, it began even before the vote. But accusations of a disconnect between candidate and head office. The opposite phenomenon with the coalition, praise for a well-connected and tight 5 weeks. What did the Liberals get so right? What did Labor get so wrong? Here to take us through the ins and outs of two campaigns. Simon Banks, he's from a government relations firm, one aligned with Labor, Hawker Britain. Toby Ralph with us too. He's a marketing strategist who's worked on more than 40 election campaigns for his sins in Australia. Ian Hankey runs a political consultancy and has been working on the coalition campaign. And Van Badham is a theatre maker and novelist. She's been writing about the campaign for The Guardian Australia. Welcome to you all.
Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Let's start with Tony Abbott and his team.
I thank the Liberal Party organisation, President Alan Stockdale and Federal Director Brian Loughnane. And yes, it's right that you should show such enthusiasm for Brian Loughnane because he has run our most professional campaign ever. I thank my personal staff, led by Peter Credlin, who is the smartest and the fiercest political warrior I have ever worked with.
Toby Ralph, that's probably the biggest cheer Brian Loughnane's had in a while. But you write today, though, the campaign magnificently dull, triumphantly monotonous, heroically tedious.
It was, and so it needed to be. The coalition started in front and stayed in front. The last thing they wanted was an unexpected explosion. They contained it and they did a superb job of it.
Is that the intention, Ian Hankey, to be magnificently dull?
Well, I think people fundamentally misunderstand what has been going on. People think of the campaign as just being a five-week period. In fact, what has been happening is that Tony Abbott and Brian Loughnane and the rest of the leadership group have been shaping the events of this for the past several years. And you cannot look at this particular campaign except within the context of the past 3 years. And that's where the beauty and the discipline of this actual campaign has occurred. The messaging was set in train some time ago, and it's been very disciplined and focused for a very considerable period of time, not just the 5 weeks.
That's true, isn't it, Simon Banks? I mean, the whole notion that the government was dysfunctional, that the budget was in crisis, that the key messages of the campaign were established by Labor's opponents.
Oh, no, absolutely. And look, the key thing when you're an opposition seeking to get into government and you're in front, as the coalition were, not just for this five-week election campaign, but through really the last 3 years, the key message you need to get out to the people is one of reassurance. And that's essentially what the structure of the coalition campaign was about. Literally, it was an attempt to be no surprises and no excuses. But one of the interesting things about this campaign is I actually think the coalition in some senses went further than maybe it needed to on some of those issues of reassurance. I think that quote, no surprises, no excuses, will come back to haunt Tony Abbott in the next 3 years. But nonetheless, for the purposes of this current 3 years we've just been through, a very skillful and well-executed campaign.
And Van Badham, as you sat back and assessed the direction of your vote, did the campaign surprise you at all? I mean, was there any element in what was presented by the two parties that took you aback?
I think I was particularly surprised that Labor seemed to have misjudged their strategies, like their social media strategy. I thought was very poor, given the fact that they'd imported the Americans to run it. Mm. I think Labor blew a massive chance by failing to connect with the youth vote. There were still 500,000 young Australians who weren't on the electoral roll yesterday, which I think is a massive oversight for a political party like Labor that campaigns on, you know, centre-left progressive values. I think that was a huge problem, and I was genuinely surprised that more effort wasn't made to connect to young people. But in regards to the Tony Abbott campaign, I mean, it was, for me, as, you know, a young middle-class woman in Australia, I was the most horrifically unsurprising, relentless misogynistic campaign, and it began because it began 3 years ago with Julia Gillard, and I congratulate the person who realised that having a woman in leadership was such an absolute horror that could wedge people and was an excellent way of portraying an entire government as something that it wasn't. I mean, the Gillard government was unbelievably successful in terms of passing legislation. We obviously have a fantastic economy. To sell the lie that the government was dysfunctional when we're living through times with the highest median income in the world, where we survived the GFC, where our standard of living is ridiculously high, where the average household income under Labor went up $5,000 over the period of the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd era. To sell that myth and make it a reality that somehow Labor was dysfunctional was based around the negative portrayal of a woman in power. And Tony Abbott was on a very easy wicket with that one.
You are to be congratulated on creating that impression, though, of dysfunction and crisis. As Van points out, the economy is not doing so poorly,
No, people tend to forget that the economy, whilst it is not too bad, it's actually... Listen. When Labor inherited office back in 2007, it had an unemployment rate of 4%. And ever since it has been in office, that unemployment rate has been growing. People are very concerned about their jobs. And in fact, with the economic update that was brought down just before the election, unemployment is forecast to grow to 6.25% by the end of next year. That means it will have grown by 2.25%. And that means you've got about 800,000 people out of work who are very concerned about their jobs in the future. You have an economy that is slowing. It is now running at about 2.5% compared to about 3.7% when the Labor government took office. You have an issue with debt, which is a great deal of concern. People understand debt because it's actually something that they have to deal with on a daily basis themselves.
So, and apparently the global financial crisis.
You can say, you know, it's better than elsewhere, but people live here. They don't live elsewhere. And so, yes, there are very genuine concerns.
But surely the point here is, Simon, to bring you in on that. I mean, you may dispute the detail of some of what Ian's saying, but the impression...
They're facts. They're not... Nothing more than fact.
But in terms of a campaign, they are very much facts in people's minds and facts that the Labor campaign was unable to shift, despite talk of AAA, despite talk of cuts. The messages did not combat that impression.
Oh, look, I don't dispute that. And look, quite frankly, you know, I'm going to put the blame fairly and squarely at the foot of the Labor Party here. I mean, the reality is that for one reason or another, we spent most of the last 3 years talking about ourselves and our internal dynamics. And when you're doing that, you're giving up precious time to talk about what's really going on out there in the world and what's affecting the people who do decide elections. We gave up that opportunity. We gave up many opportunities to basically rebut a number of the myths. I mean, you know, to put it in really simple terms, if Ian wants the numbers, 2.6% growth, 2.4% inflation, 2.5% interest rates and 5.7% unemployment. These are figures that anywhere in the world would be the envy, but I fully accept the Labor Party did not do our job well enough over the last 3 years combating these great myths. And this was ultimately vindicated by the fact that the so-called budget emergency, which Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey have banged on about for the last 4 years, basically exploded when they released their costings 2 days ago. They're basically doing nothing. Well, at least they're not telling the Australian people they're going to do anything about the state of the budget over the next 4 years. I actually think we'll find out when the Commission of Audit comes out that they're going to jury-rig the numbers and the budget emergency will be back on again.
So, Toby, why did one of those impressions of the economy and our general state of well-being win through?
I suspect... because it's true, that old thing. Could it be that they're deeply competent managers, but just incompetent campaigners?
Well, didn't somebody say last night we've won the policy, but we completely lost the politics on the Labor side?
They probably did. I suspect they kind of lost both. but there we are. You know, history will be the judge of that. not a room full of dodgy propagandists.
Is that us?
That's do
us.
Speak for yourself, sir.
I think we're all guilty of that at some point.
Yeah. Simon, the big accusation that's been made against the Labor campaign was this sense of disconnection between the plane and head office. Mm. Anything to report on that?
Well, look, I mean, I think you have to look at the results on the ground. And the reality is that, you know, certainly in comparison to Tony Abbott's campaign, which was, you know, very slick, almost militaristic in its function, you know, clearly the Labor campaign was not as smooth. Look, any time you replace your leader, you know, literally 2 months before Election Day, and, look, my understanding, you know, what I've been told is that, you know, up to half the people in our campaign headquarters, you know, change in personnel or roles and functions within all of that. You had a travelling party which literally, you know, was only on the road for a few weeks before the electoral, you know, the actual campaign got underway. You're going to run into problems. Now, you know, whether those could have been better, look, yeah, one of the things I'll confess is that when I worked for Kevin, I never was able to keep him running on time, so I'm not going to be critical of others who couldn't do that as well.
But Ian, as much as your side had a long time to prepare here, the fact that there would be an election around about now could have come as no surprise to Labor either. Were you surprised at that sort of sense of makeshift?
Yep. They should have been a lot more prepared. I'll give you one example of how they were not very well organised, despite the change of leadership. Last week, George Wright sent out an email letter soliciting donations, and he wanted $5 and $10 donations, you know, small change donations. It's a good idea. And in his letter, he said, and those bastard Liberals, you know, they want $250 and $500. You know, have a look at the letter below. And he had attached a copy of one of our email begging letters. And it was right. There were, you know, options to donate $250 and $500. But the thing is, he actually sent our begging letter to his network. We actually got a lot more money that day. Thanks very much, George. I'm dead serious. Now, this is the level that when you're talking about running a campaign, that's just... It's tiny. It's only small, but it is indicative.
It's the little things that add up.
It's little things that add up, and that's only just one of many things that went wrong.
I mean, Van, the big thing for Labor, and I think you suggested this, hinted this before, this sort of sense of disconnection from base and from the sort of potential that was there amongst a lot of people whose instincts would be in line with the Labor Party. How did that fail?
Well, I think the thing is that you can't have policies. You can't play for that righter-than-thou position with the Liberal Party. You will lose. They're always going to be more right-wing than you are. And I think this has been a failing Labor strategy for a very long time. And I think looking at Kevin Rudd's position on asylum seekers and the PNG solution, the moment you announce a divisive policy like that, and the Labor Party had similar problems with going to a three-mine uranium mining solution in the 1980s, is that you lose the hip and cool centre-left people, the well-connected media people, the celebrities. Nobody wants to attach a brand that has currency, that's progressive, that speaks to young people, that speaks to progressive minds in the electorate. No one wants to attach that brand to a party that's interning asylum seekers in dreadful camps in appalling conditions on Manus Island. Nobody wants that. So, I mean, I remember the Rudd campaign in 2007 and being at the Peter Garrett party afterwards, and Cate Blanchett was there, and all these celebrities were there bringing those brands, those internationally recognised brands, to the verve and the vibrancy of Kevin 07. Absolutely. And that carries weight, particularly with young people. And can you do that? Can you replicate that by resuscitating Kevin Rudd and then creating the ridiculous This Is Labor social media strategy? The only people who supported that strategy were already in the Labor Party. No, you can't. And so you get people, media spokespeople and celebrities drifting to more progressive and more interesting causes, like the Greens and Adam Bandt, who had fantastic...
Or Clive Palmer. Is there a misconception there, Toby, about brand? And you know, yeah, we assume that these things are fought in the centre, but for the Labor Party, that's a pretty difficult proposition, chasing the Liberals to the right.
It is, and they're never going to win on that. You know, when you step back from the day-to-day of any election campaign, and look at the 113 years we've had of governments in Australia, we have always decided who will win based on the economy. That's always been what it is. And when we feel we've got money in the bank and we can spend on social change, we'll lean left. And when we think we need to run the shop a bit better, we'll lean right. That's always what determines it. The rest of it is a bit of light entertainment.
And Simon, is this the great reassessment for Labor? Is what was that thing that we actually stood for? Is that the big question?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that if you actually look at most of the policies, I'm certainly not going to pretend all of the policies that we went to the election on, were actually very well placed. And let me just give you one example, which is climate change. There was an interesting poll that came out about 10 days ago, a really good sample, a bit over 2,000 people, very reliable numbers. And what it basically shows is that Labor people overwhelmingly support an emissions trading scheme. A fair whack of Liberals, about a bit over 30% of Liberals support an emissions trading scheme. And 75% of Greens support an emissions trading scheme. So this is one of those classic cases where, in fact, Labor's not wedged to the left or to the right. Our supporters are right behind us on this issue. It's one of those things which I think, you know, some of the Liberals were surprised last night when a number of Labor spokespeople, like Bill Shorten, Jason Clare were the two I saw, you know, talking about how Labor is going to take up the fight on pricing carbon to the coalition. I think some people on the Liberal side think that they've got a winner. Well, they might have on the broken promise on the carbon tax, but on the policy going forward about pricing carbon, they don't.
And why do you confuse them with the likes of border protection?
Well, I don't think we do confuse people with the likes of border protection. Look, I mean, I don't think anyone on the Labor Party is particularly, you know, happy or delighted about the tough policy that inevitably we've had to adopt. Mm-hmm. It is showing some signs of working. And I've got to say, I don't agree with the analysis that says that, you know, that policy, you know, in some way cost Labor votes. In fact, quite the contrary. I mean, if you look at what's happened across the western suburbs of Sydney, you know, at this stage, Labor's only going to lose one seat out there. That's Lindsay. It clearly did have some resonance amongst those people. And when you come back into the inner city, whilst Adam Band obviously did very well in Melbourne because of the massive resources the Greens put into retaining that seat, in a seat like Grindler, for example, Anthony Albanese's seat, he actually increased his vote at the expense of the Greens. I mean, so the notion, again, that this was a policy which somehow divided the Labor Party from its natural base, I actually just do not accept it's true, and I don't think the polling numbers demonstrate that either.
I mean, it's interesting, Ian Hankey. I mean, coalition has won. There's nothing can take that away. And yet, in areas in which it thought it might do particularly well, Queensland, Western Sydney, it has not had the result that it might have hoped for.
Listen, I think there is an expectation built up unnecessarily that there is going to be a greater number of seats secured than what has occurred. We'll end up, I suspect, with probably about 20 or 21 seats picked up. Now, that is an impressive result by any stretch of the imagination. And I think, you know, there is an expectation that would pick up, you know, 30 or something like that, and that was just nonsense as far as, you know, any person that sat down and just looked at the figures was going to expect. I mean, what we saw really was, I think people in those key seats and seats that were picked up looked at the alternatives and they voted in a very positive way for change. It wasn't just the result of a bad government. They actually voted for a positive change, for some stability. So it was a positive change that people made. And the expectation that there were going to be more seats picked up, I think, was just basically unrealistic. We've picked up the so-called Rudd slide in 2007, delivered them a majority of 13 seats. Well, we're going to be, you know, probably about 20 or 21 seats. It'll be a very solid result, a very respectable result.
Can I just say that the numbers actually don't support Ian's analysis there. We've had three change of government elections over the last 30 years, 1983, 96 and 2007. The lowest swing in two-party preferred terms was in 1983. That was 3.6. At the moment, Tony Abbott's sitting on 3.5. And in 2007 and 96, it was over 5%. Mm. On each of those three elections, the number of seats that the incoming government picked up were 24 in 83 in a 125-seat parliament, 29 in 1996, 23 in 2007. And as we sit here today, the coalition's only going to pick up 15 or 16 seats with a primary vote swing of less than 2%.
But a win's a win.
It's actually a win is a win, but the notion that this is some kind of emphatic embrace of Tony Abbott and the coalition, no, it's a rejection of the Labor Party.
A very quick last word for you, Van. Yes, Labor should learn what?
Well, Labor's got to learn that, its brand has got to be positive. And can we please be realistic about, what we know past elections have in common? Since 1996, you win the election if Rupert Murdoch backs you. That's a fact. And if you can get messages out to the Australian people...
Sunday Extra, that's been our panel on the campaign. Bruce Hawker after 9:00.